If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You're listening to the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
Off the left iron and out. 4-point lead for Buffalo. Left wing. Jenkins can't get a shot up. Buffalo has won the 2025 postseason WNIT championship. Becky Burke, bring out the scissors. Buffalo is cutting down a net in April. The UB Bulls defeat Troy 88-84 in the championship game in front of a record crowd sellout at Alumni Arena.
Jack Cruiser there on the call. The final few seconds of the game on Saturday. The UB women do win the WNIT postseason championship. Heard it there, record-breaking crowd, just over 5,600 people packed into Alumni Arena. It looked amazing the entire time. Another grinded-out comeback performance from just a great group.
Seriously, it never a doubt, right?
Never a doubt.
This is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. I'm Derek Kramer. He's Zach Jones. And with us on the West Her Hotline, fresh off of a win and a championship in the women's NIT, is Coach Becky Burke. Coach, it's great to talk with you again. And the ladies seem to have a flair for the dramatic in this NIT run.
Oh my gosh, they seem to have a flair for the dramatic all season, right? It's pretty wild, but what other way to go out than the way that we've done it all year, right?
Exactly. Congratulations, right. By the way. That was the first
thing you.
I should have said, but I had that one cooking in my brain since I heard the final call on Saturday. So I apologize for not saying congratulations first.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Has this win kind of settled now? I mean, it was Saturday night. Have you guys been able to celebrate and really soak up not only the WNIT championship, but also a record-setting year overall, 30 wins this year for the program to a sold-out crowd? It was an unbelievable weekend for you guys.
Yeah, it was, you know, you just wake up yesterday and even today still just pinching yourself a little bit. Just, you know, we really pulled that off, not just the WNIT championship, but in our community and our university, just what we did, selling out Alumni Arena, and, you know, 2 hours before the tip, fans lined up, you know, down the sidewalk. I mean, it was just an incredible thing for women's basketball, an incredible thing for our program, our team, and this university. So to put it all together and cap it off with a win is really special to look back and realize what we just did and, you know, what we've built here in 3 short years. So super thankful and just full of gratitude and just really, really excited for our group.
You mentioned the team, and our last few visits, we haven't, you know, been able to totally dive into some of the players, but one woman I do want to give kind of her flowers to, Chella Watson, wins the WNIT MVP. She's been one of your best players all year. I saw you two kind of having a back and forth on Twitter as well after this. What has she meant to this program and to you personally?
Oh, just everything, man. She's one of the best to ever do it. She's in that conversation with Sierra Dillard and De'Asia Fair and, you know, Steph Reed and all those guys that put their mark on this program in the time that they've been here. And so, you know, one of the most dynamic scorers we've seen here at Buffalo and in the country, really. So to see her go out with the championship is something that we've always talked about and something that we wanted to accomplish together. And, you know, she's a really, really important person in my life and will continue to be moving forward. But just to see her grow these last 5 years and a number of different stops together has just been incredible. So rewarding. And, you know, it's why we do it. It's why I'm in this profession, to see people like Chella Watson do what she just did on the court and then see what she's about to go do in her life off of the court as well. So I'm so proud. That's probably an understatement, but she deserves it. She's earned it. She's one of the best to ever wear a Buffalo uniform. That's for sure.
Coach, when it comes to other players on this roster, I spoke with Jack Cruiser before the game on Saturday as well, and he wanted to make sure to give flowers for Nalani Cornfield and how she had been able to play her game throughout a season of resilience as well. 11 assists, 15 points in that final game as well, as someone that was able to step up as well for your team in this championship win.
Oh, she's really special. She's incredible and statistically has done a great job for us this year, but, you know, she's defensively our best player. It's not even close. You know, she's facilitating like no other player I've seen, you know, this year in terms of just passing the basketball and getting people involved and just the pace we're able to play because she's on the floor. You know, the unsung hero, Kirsten, gets her flowers and Chella, and, you know, Lonnie is doing a lot of the work behind the scenes and just in those categories a lot of people don't recognize. You know, we're a different team this year, and we won 30 basketball games in a WNIT championship because Lonnie was on our team, and I'm so proud of her. So thankful. Just her and I's relationship this year, I just, you know, one of those kids that's really changed my perspective on coaching and my perspective on, you know, just relationships with players just because of how I've gotten to know her this year. So she is one I will never forget.
UB Women's head basketball coach Becky Burke here on the Wester Hotline. Coach, Derek brought it up right at the start too. You guys seem to have a flair for the dramatic all year, but really this NIT, you know, run a couple games, having to come back from lengthy deficits, including on Saturday being down, I think, 14 points at the most, an overtime win. What was it about this group that has just been able to be resilient, never really get worried about being down multiple possessions and just kind of willing themselves to wins at times?
Yeah, I don't have the answer of like why that kept happening this year, but what I do know is that it shows tremendous amount of character, so shows a tremendous amount of resilience and grit, and, you know, that's how our team is built. That's who we recruit here, and, you know, you obviously don't want to be in those situations as much as we were, but our ability to find ourselves out of those situations is unlike any team I've ever coached. You know, we liked the adversity. We liked, you know, having to come from behind. We started to play a little bit better when we were in those situations versus playing with leads sometimes. So, you know, I don't know how to exactly point my finger to it and figure out, you know, what was the reason was we kept, you know, putting ourselves in that position, but to see a team that time after time after time again could get themselves out of it and figure out a way to win just tells you what type of kids these were and what type of players they are. And you know, it's not easy to come back from double figures, you know, 10, 12 times this year and win, and that's double figures in the fourth quarter, you know. So they're special, they're unique, and I've never coached a group like them.
Coach, the last thing here from me, this one was just fascinating for me to find out, though, that you beat a team in the NIT championship that you also opened the entire season with. That's one of the more rare opportunities that you get to see in sports, is that you start your season against the same opponent and you beat them twice, one to open the year, but then the other to win an entire tournament.
Yeah, I don't know that there's ever been like a bookend, you know, type of situation like that before. And obviously being able to have two wins, one on the start and one on the finish, I think was really cool. Just kind of a poetic way to end our season and very unique. But yeah, I think that's pretty crazy. And we were two totally different teams, 37 games later than we were the first time we played. So it was definitely a fun little unique challenge that I think both of us embraced, both parties, and thankful we were on the right side of it.
That was my thing too, is like, because of how much distance was between the two games, like how much film could you really watch from that first game and be like, all right, we're learning the same thing here. As you mentioned, Coach, two entirely different teams. Last thing for me here, don't want to take up too much of your morning. Have you been able to daydream yet about raising that banner opening night next year?
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. I've been daydreaming about that before we even won the thing,
right.
You know,
yep.
and that's been a plan, is to continue to have banners here in Alumni Arena and continue to, you know, make sure that this program stays extremely competitive and makes the city proud and, stays on the platform it deserves to be on at this mid-major level. And I think we've done that, and I'm super, super excited to move forward and maintain the success and build off of it. You know, it's something that's going to be extremely attractive to players that want to come play here at Buffalo to see what we just did this season.
Coach, congratulations on a historic season, 30 wins, the WNIT championship. I've enjoyed our conversations immensely throughout the year. You deserve it. Have a wonderful offseason. Hope we can talk again soon here in a few months.
Thank you guys so much for your support. Means a ton. Appreciate you.
That was UB Women's head coach Becky Burke there on the West Her Hotline. I love that she brought up that last point, too, of just you get to raise that banner, have that trophy. It is something to get recruits there, especially
yes. At
the mid-major level. And it's been something I've sort of wrestled with the idea of, you know, predominantly Buffalo being mid-major basketball.
Yes.
St. Bonaventure, you could argue, is the higher end of mid-major in the A-10, but they're all mid-majors. You know, what would mean more, a one-and-done in the NCAA tournament? Or what the UB women's programs did, going 5-for-5 in the NIT, having a sold-out home crowd and raising an NIT championship.
And this is also a program that went and made a Sweet 16 run.
Mm-hmm.
So I said it to you before when we talked with Coach Becky Burke about this, of not many teams in basketball mm-hmm. get to end on a high note.
Yeah.
And now you have a university that has two teams within major sports that have gone out on a high note. The UB football team wins in the Bahama Bowl, which you also got to go to the Bahamas.
Yeah, that's the Battle of the Bowls. It's like,
right?
It's like, where are we going? Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to the Bahamas.
And then,
suite.
Yeah, UB gets to go to the Bahamas for their bowl game, and they win it in convincing fashion. And now the UB women sell out their arena and get to hoist a championship banner that gets to hang in the rafters for all time.
Yeah, that's going to be something I'm going to want to check out.
And basketball,
because that's
teams,
so cool.
Basketball teams do not often have the opportunity to go out on top.
Mm-hmm.
Say a team surprisingly wins a conference tournament. Well, guess what? You're going to the dance. You're not making it long if you're a team that was a surprise to win your conference.
I mean, I even look at the 16 seeds, Alabama State. I mean, you win
yeah. Your
conference tournament, that's awesome. But you kind of know you're going
you
to
know
be the fodder
going to happen.
For a one seed.
You, like, more teams than not, it's not that you know what's going to happen. You're disappointed at what happens because you're a competitor. You don't care.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The UB women get to say something that UConn does. We ended our season with a championship
and
a win.
And that's it. It's those two teams get to say that they are raising a championship and being done. And as Derek pointed out there, the women's college basketball season is actually over. UConn takes down South Carolina in a relatively uncompetitive game. UConn
yeah.
was dominating that for most of the time. My aunt and uncle are huge UConn fans, so I was texting them the entire time. Sadly, they had to go to a birthday party right before the game. And so they ended up eventually getting there, but like in the middle of the game, they're at a birthday party. 82-59, UConn dominates. Paige Beckers finishes one of the better college careers you can imagine, especially with her ups and downs, torn ACLs mm-hmm. and such. Wonderful player, likely going to go number one overall in the WNIT. Tonight.
WNBA.
Oh, thank you, WNBA. Tonight we'll wrap up the men after a very entertaining Final Four on the men's bracket. It will be Florida versus Houston. Florida taking down Auburn, Walter Clayton Jr. kind of developing into a Kemba Walker type story mm-hmm. with them winning the SEC championship, really off his back, a great team overall, now making this run here. And then Houston beating the team kind of no one thought they'd beat, including the last minute half of the game. If you did not watch it.
Oh, you mean Purdue?
Purdue. Duke absolutely botched the end of that game. Houston gets it home. And now I will tell you, I know there's some connections locally with Florida. I want to see Kelvin Sampson win a national championship. And I kind of just want to see Houston win a national championship in basketball so bad.
Purdue would have made it too, you know.
They're pretty good.
They are.
Braden Smith's pretty good. Purdue's become a pretty darn good basketball school, even though they have the 16-1.
Why'd Houston have to get in the way?
Houston, though, that game should be a lot of fun. Going to start around 8:50. I believe our, though, programming here is going to get you over to that at around 7 o'clock tonight. We'll see about that. But that game's going to get going at about 8:50 tonight because, of course, it is. Because every national championship in the world has to start at an ungodly hour for us East Coasters. Going to take a quick timeout here. We're going to go in a little bit early. We're going to reopen up the show, 803-0550, the number to call if you want to join in, as we're going to talk a lot about what this weekend was. We've got the draft coming up in about 2 weeks, a little over 2 weeks. Alexander Ovechkin does get it done in one of, I think, a lot of people's favorite sports moments maybe ever. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. not leaving Toronto, and plenty more as well. We'll jump into that. If you want to join the conversation again, 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and this is WGR.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can choose the TV you want with DirecTV.
So now they can pick out their favorite entertainment when they sign up and save money?
You mean if you like sports,
you can get a sports pack.
What about entertainment?
Entertainment pack.
It's like finding an old pizza with your favorite toppings. Which for me would be pineapple and toenails.
Pineapple?
Pay for the TV you want, not the TV you don't. Genre pack starting at $34.99 a month. Visit DirectTV.com for more information. New residential customers only. Local channels vary by market. Services renew monthly unless you cancel online. Credit card required. Restrictions apply.
Neutralized 13 in the last 14 shorthanded situations against them. Strom crisscrossing with Chychrun through center. Send in Wilson on the flank. Cross ice. Ovechkin fires. Score! The chasing days are done! Alex Ovechkin is the greatest goal scorer in the history of the NHL!
John Beninati on the call there. I was so happy I watched this live.
I'm so serious. I'm happy that Josh picked that call.
Yes.
Beninati, a voice you would hear on Versus.
Oh, Versus.
Back in the day.
Yes.
Yeah, baby. You know Versus Hockey. And formerly on the Outdoor Living Network. As Josh is now just giggling over there.
The memories are flooding through him.
Yes. Because I remember the Brian Campbell hit.
Yep.
And that man made that call.
Mm-hmm.
Flyers looking to respond.
It's just...
Words before disaster.
But that moment was so perfect, wasn't it?
Yes.
It really was. To get to 895, it's on the power play. It's a quote-unquote important goal because they're down 2-0. And he just comes flying in, pretty much in his office, and it's an old-school wrist shot in, and then he does like the belly flop.
It was a perfect saucer pass, too, by Tom Wilson. It was just like everything perfect about it. He gets to catch it, lean into it, really flex the stick, and let it rip. It was perfect. I do think that how it all worked out was poetic. I said it on Saturday I'm glad that at least one of the two moments happened in front of Washington Capitals fans.
Agreed.
At home, which was tying it. That one was also not the cleanest entry. Mangiapane has to kick it to his stick, shovel it over to Carlson, who no-looks it over to Ovechkin, and it's a goal.
Mm-hmm.
Spencer Knight knows it's coming, can't stop it anyway. And that was awesome that it happened in front of the fans. Thank you. Good. Now go get the thing. Mm-hmm. I don't care where. Go get it. There was an opportunity to still do it again at home, but I will say the big thing there was Ovechkin telling his coach, no, I don't want it to be an empty net goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's more of, maybe he knows how it would look in the history books. Maybe he knows that the context wouldn't be added. Because Ryan Leonard scores an empty net goal to make it 5-3 against Chicago back on Friday night. And I'm watching with a couple people, and they're just like, oh, come on. Why are we not giving Ovi a chance there? First of all, Ovechkin then followed up the second empty net goal with two quality chances from the slot. So that didn't stop him.
Right.
But, yeah, he played like the last minute 39 of that game. After that empty net goal happened. So, as a matter of fact, I think Ryan Leonard did them a favor.
Yeah.
Because now Ovechkin, you get to sit out there for a minute 30. Have fun. Go nuts. He puts on two quality shots there. And then Spencer Carberry tells reporters, yeah, no, Ovi doesn't want to be on for an empty net goal. And context is always important to me. Like, Ryan Leonard, the way he scores that empty net goal, that's a really good play. It's a hardworking play. And if that video was attached to every statistical thing, if Ovechkin scored it that way, of like he has to fight two players off, or like it's like how Alex Tuck scored an empty net goal against Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
There's context there. It's a hardworking, very well earned empty net goal. They're not all the same. I'm not looking at it like that. And Ovechkin's not looking at it like that. Because people will not look at the context. Now, however, they see PPG next to the record breaker and go, oh, I know what happened here. And it wasn't exactly how his typical power play goals happen. Usually that's the slap shot from the spot.
Right.
Nope, it was a powerful, powerful snapper from the spot. Slightly north of the spot. Like, he didn't quite make it to the circle, but that's how much power he put into that flex.
What's the thing? That's why it's like he's kind of coming into his office because he's flying in.
But again, you see him really flexing on that thing. Like, all right, this thing's going somewhere. I don't know where, but it's going there. And it went in the net.
Man, just – I liked even, too, that it was like an early Sunday morning. Like, it was.
Yeah, it was a Sunday afternoon against the New York Islanders, which is Ovechkin's greatest accomplishment in all of hockey, is making everyone tune in to a New York Islanders hockey game in the regular season.
It's just, you know.
Good for him.
Funny enough, a lot of.
You made people watch the Islanders.
Yeah. But funny enough, a lot of like our generation, Ovechkin has sort of been some of the more heartwarming moments in the NHL. Like Crosby won a cup relatively early.
Yes.
Gretzky wins a cup relatively early. It was Ovi's chase for a long time that got people engaged into the Capitals. Their constant playoff debacles and, you know, Pittsburgh getting the better of them, what have you. Ovechkin was always playing second fiddle. And then, of course, he gets his cup, and it's this great moment. And we all remember the summer of celebration, and we all laugh about it. We all enjoy it. And even this record, too, for a long time was perceived as untouchable. Ovechkin is considered the greatest modern goal scorer of all time, but he will not have the actual record. And then he kept scoring. And for me, too, it's even that point as well. This wasn't a season where he's 40 years old, 39 years old, and he put up 15 goals. And you're like, oh, we got there. He's at 42 now.
I'll put you one further. It literally wasn't even last year where he only puts up 31.
Yeah, yeah.
That's disgusting that I have to say that in a sentence. He only put up 31 goals last year in a full year. 31 in 79 games. That is production that, like, you very rarely see from Ovechkin is less than a goal every other game.
Mm-hmm.
That was the last season on age 38 that we had seen heading into the year. So we're like, everyone here is thinking, okay, it's probably going to take two seasons. Because, like, he's obviously slowing down now.
Yeah, well, that was the perception. Is like, we are going to get to, oh, does he have, like, maybe a 25-goal season?
And then he breaks his leg. And now we're like, yeah, okay, now it's definitely, like, he was on fire to start the year. Now it's definitely going to have to wait until next year. Nope, he comes back earlier than the timeline is predicting. And he still rifles off to 42 goals in 61 games.
Gets right back to work.
That is production that you've seen from him in his peak.
Just so much fun. It's so much fun to watch him play, the emotion he has. And I did find myself getting a little emotional. And it's weird. I'm not like this diehard Alexander Ovechkin fan. I'm not a closeted like Capitals fan or anything.
Right.
It's just that is something I maybe love in sports more than anything else. The long chase. You know, constantly being the Wile E. Coyote and never the road. You know, I love that stuff when it finally comes due, when you finally have your moment. Like, if we're looking at football, I'll never have that with Patrick Mahomes. I will never sit here in 10 years going, oh, man, he finally got one. He got one early. I already know for a fact I will probably tear up when the Bills make the Super Bowl. If they win it, I'm balling. I know who I am as a person. I'll probably get emotional if Lamar Jackson wins a Super Bowl in 10 years.
Yeah.
If he has not won one up to this point, because I love, love, love those chases.
You're a Drew Brees kind of guy.
Drew Brees. Yeah, like those moments in 09 of like the Saints finally doing something, him having that moment after Hurricane Katrina. For me, though, it's more, I wish I was older when Manning won his first Super Bowl. When Peyton Manning won his first Super Bowl. I wish I was a little older. I was like 8 when that happened. I have no recollection, really, of that Super Bowl. I wish, though, I was like 15, 16, because that would be something that I would fall in love with.
Right.
Like now, it was the Eagles winning after years of being bad and having moments and not getting there. And now it really will be Buffalo winning a Super Bowl with Josh Allen specifically. Baltimore, not so much. Lamar, though, yes.
Yes.
It's these guys now going on these treks to get it done, to finally silence the critics. One personally for me as well that's there is Mike Trout.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You know, baseball, we've got Guerrero. He's now the third highest, you know, total value contract in MLB. He's moved Trout down to 4, which is fine. But the Angels are having a pretty darn solid start to the year. They've won 3 straight series. They're 6-3. Trout has homered or did homer in 3 straight games. He seems to be healthy.
Zach.
No, but
it's a trap.
But I'm more saying in the sense too of like if they really went on a run, if all of a sudden they were good this year,
it would probably make you emotional just to see Mike Trout make the playoffs for the first time.
100%. Oh my gosh, absolutely. And it's stuff like this with Ovechkin where Washington kept making the playoffs. They were winning President's Trophies. They were not a bad team. He didn't go through like 10 years of crap. They've been good forever.
The thing was they had some down years.
Yeah, they did have some down years.
They've had years where they've missed the playoffs.
But I will tell you, I'm sitting here now, and even like ESPN showing this too, in they did it in the same amount of games, Ovechkin and Gretzky. The same amount of games.
Yeah, it was the same amount of games, and Ovechkin just has one more goal.
One more goal. I mean, that is perfection. I will tell you now, though, I want to see the Capitals win a cup. I want to see it this year.
If we thought the summer of Ovi was crazy, this would be even crazier.
I know the analytics don't totally love the Capitals. They seem to be kind of a paper tiger. I don't care. I would love to see one more for him to kind of have the storybook ending I've got two cups, I've got this goal record, and 10 years ago, not even, 5-6 years ago, it was tough to think how his career would end outside of just, well, he's got a lot of goals.
It would be too storybook, I think.
Disney
would look at that and go, that's too scripted.
But what are we, 4 years ago, 5 years ago? No one thought he'd get this record.
Yeah.
Now the way he's going too, let's get to 900.
Oh, he's absolutely.
Let's get to 1,000.
Slow your roll. I don't think Ovechkin has enough willingness to stay in the NHL to do that.
The Capitals are competitive, though.
Ready? If he doesn't win a cup, all bets are on the table. But if he wins a cup,
oh, he's gone. Yeah, he's gone. He's going
Dunions.
Back to Russia. He's going back to the KHL.
Super Dunions.
Yeah.
And ready? I still think he might.
Yeah, you're still there on that.
I'm still thinking that he might. Like, he did it. This is it. And now this cup run is, this is it. Go get it for him.
Yeah, and that was the thing, too, is why we talked about this maybe 2 weeks ago when it was maybe up in the air if he would get it by the end of the regular season. You know, my mention, too, is I think they're going to force it because how much – and they kind of did, but also Ovi was just on fire. I mean, he was scoring on a pop that was absurd. I think it also got to a point, too, of we're so comfortable in the playoff race, that would be such a downer if he didn't get it. I actively think it would have hurt their season. Where now, I agree with you, where now it is this feeling of he's got it, let's go win this thing.
Let's go win this thing because he's done.
He's done, he's got it, we're cooking, let's go.
Now, ready? It's funny how you say the forcing thing.
Mm-hmm.
Ovechkin only has 225 shots this year. Only. Yes, he missed time with a broken leg. This is the thing that makes the record-breaking season so much more interesting to me. Ovechkin's shooting at a career-high 18.7%.
Mm.
He is a career 13% shooter, which is typically where you want your league average hanging around.
Yeah.
18.7. So he's been most efficient at age 39.
Just unreal.
Numbers are fun.
Just unreal.
That was the thing to me that I was looking at it on Saturday of like, oh my God, it's not even close. It is his best shooting percentage as a hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
Probably better than like anything except for like age 14, where he's just cooking kids his age. We won't have those statistics, but I still digress. Mm-hmm. It is the fact that he's hitting a career best in shot percentage to get to 42 at age 39. So it's not even like they're forcing it and like he's leading the league in shots again like he typically does. Ovechkin hasn't led the league in shots since 2018.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting more efficient in his later years, and that is something stupendous.
I do want to bring this up, and I saw it yesterday on Twitter, and I think it's spot on. And we talk about it a little bit here and there. How much we build up records and performances in sports like baseball, the NHL, the NFL. We had a record similar to goals get broken in a different sport this year. Points.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron James became the NBA's all-time leading point scorer. Where was any of this fanfare for a guy who's a similar age and also performing surprisingly at a similar pop? I think when we talk about issues the NBA has, I think it's got to start right there. Enough with the over-criticizing of your current players. Ovechkin is 39. He's scored now, what, 42 goals this year?
Yes.
And all the NHL can do is praise that. I think correctly. MLB. All the MLB can do is tell you how cool Shohei Ohtani is.
Yes.
How amazing he is.
How awesome it is to watch Aaron Judge rake.
Yep. We are going to actively ruin college football games to get you to an Aaron Judge at bat because he's record chasing. And I say that pejoratively and somewhat jokingly, but I mean that. And I think ESPN was doing that for basketball. But man, did it ever feel like anyone not only cared, did it feel like anyone like wanted it to happen? It felt like the entire sports world wanted Ovi to pass Gretzky.
And I think it has to do with two things. The personalities of the players.
Sure, right.
And I think that, so LeBron James got his record through three different franchises.
Mm-hmm.
So the paths they take does matter here a little bit. There are two fan bases effectively scorned by him, including his hometown. Ovechkin.
Yeah, they got a championship. They're fine.
Yes, but like Alex Ovechkin, though, dogmatically.
Yeah.
Almost to a point. Said, I'm doing it with this team and this team only. The team that drafted me, I don't care through thick and thin.
I will be here.
I will be here. Because you've been here for me. And so I think that plays something into it. And the other portion is their hype coming into the National Hockey League. Alex Ovechkin, when the lockout ended, Alex Ovechkin was not the most hyped player coming into his sport.
Mm-hmm.
That was Sidney Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Ovechkin could have been, if not for that lockout. But his rookie season
gets delayed
by an entire year.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron James was seen as, this is going to be an ultimate culmination of his career. He is that good. He is the next MJ.
Mm-hmm.
At a different position, but he's still going to do it.
Yeah, in terms of all-time greats.
Everyone knew it the minute he stepped on the court. So it almost seemed like it was an eventuality and a culmination. Whereas with Ovechkin, he scores 52 in his first season and he's on fire. But eventually it fades. There are three seasons in a row where he only gets to the 30-goal threshold and falls short of 40.
I love the only.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I'm emphasizing this just so that we can point out how unreal it is. And that's where it fizzles a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, we're still not even talking about it because Gretzky's records are on such another parallel that we don't even know what to do with them. Even these last 2 years where we're thinking he's got to play until he's like 40, 41 to get there. And it's, again, because he only scores 31 last year. Only. It's disgusting how I have to say it like this mm-hmm. and frame it like this. But he's probably, like, we know he could do it. It's just going to be, how long does he want to stick around in the NHL? Does he want to go home?
Mm-hmm.
I think and everyone's like, he's going to stick it out if it's within reach. Like, next year, he would have been here.
Mm-hmm.
If he didn't have it. Now, he's got it. And did it in a pace where it was so frantic. And the last thing is this. Hype. What was one of the things that we talked about earlier on in the year here with the Extra Point Show? Four Nations Tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey is more popular right now than on a national scope.
Yeah, they're hitting on
than
all
it
cylinders.
Has been in a long time. And the NBA at that same point in time struggled with the NBA All-Star Game because of someone like this, like LeBron, who does not like to participate within it.
I was going to say, you even see the All-Star Game. Number one, he's killed the dunk contest because he never wanted to participate in it ever in his career.
He never takes part in it.
And then this year, kind of infamously now, takes up a spot on the All-Star team and then doesn't play.
Yeah. So there is something to that. Like, star players missing All-Star games, we've seen that all throughout the years.
Mm-hmm.
And Ovechkin's not even a part of the Four Nations tournament.
No.
And we all think to ourselves, well, yeah, what if Russia wasn't being jerks?
Mm-hmm.
You know, then we get to see Ovechkin out there in this tournament.
Playing at the level he's playing right now.
Playing at the level he's playing at right now. And everyone, like, could you imagine he's on this record chase and you're like, oh my God, please don't let him get hurt here.
We were feeling that way about the Canadian and U.S. players.
So ready?
Just random teams, yeah.
Now Ovechkin gets to go to the Olympics. I don't know if Russia will be able to participate as a country itself, but we've had the athletes of Russia.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So now,
if he
wants to be in part of Olympic play through one way or another, if Russia is able to do so, he can just do it without any remorse.
I find it so curious how radically different. I think three of the four sports talk about themselves. Because even it's not just LeBron, Nikola Jokic, his personality sometimes rubs me the wrong way. I think I wish he showed more passion, but that's neither here nor there. He is one of the greatest players ever.
I feel like it is his personality to be like, yeah, no, this is just a game.
It should, but I think it was like Marcus Morris or someone like that was like, he's not a top 15 player of all time. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Yes, he is. What is this fascination with this sport of bringing everyone down? only building up a certain era. Everyone else is garbage.
I think it is an ego thing at that point.
Like having to hear that Steph Curry would have just gotten beaten to hell when I'm like, okay, were the Detroit Pistons dirty or not? Because the way half of you talk about this sport, it was actually how everyone should have been playing, and we're only upset because our teams didn't do it.
Yes.
And that's my thing is I appreciate how the NFL, MLB, and the NHL want to build up their current stars. They want to do the torch passing aspect of the sport where the NBA seems unwilling at all to do it. And I think it's hurt the game overall to the point now where we have one legitimate NBA superstar that's American born. And I'm saying that mainly based off a playoff run last year. I can't say that Anthony Edwards is still a superstar.
Yep.
Not when I've got guys like, you know, Giannis, Nikola Jokic still being amazing, Luka Doncic, that trade being the trade that kind of flipped the script for the NBA season. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I believe, is also American, so he could enter that with Oklahoma City. But even then, the sport refuses to talk about the Oklahoma City, who are on a historic pace win-wise, until about 15 minutes ago, because they're not Boston and they're not the Lakers.
And Charles Barkley infamously called that out. A little
yes.
bit ago.
Yes, he did.
And I did love when I heard that because Charles Barkley saying, why don't we talk about what? Like, and he says it without saying ESPN, which is the funniest part about it. He goes, we're going to be working with those yeah, guys yeah. soon enough in a very sarcastic manner. But Barkley effectively calls out Kendrick Perkins in particular and says, why are we not talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder? Why are we not talking about the Cleveland Cavaliers?
The two teams who have been number one in their respective conferences basically from the word go,
yes.
by the way.
And that is, I don't know what, like, NBA coverage has become this point of, if you're not the Lakers or Boston, you're dead to me. I remember how much it was like, how disappointing it was that we had the matchup. It was, who was it, Milwaukee and Phoenix?
From a few years ago, yes.
From a few years ago.
When Giannis got his
title.
Oh,
my God, ESPN was so pissed.
Which, yeah, and that's maybe, again, I the older I get, the more I realize I'm a different kind of fan. That was from a few years ago, the Final Four in college basketball, when it was San Diego State, Florida Atlantic, Miami, and UConn. I was pumped.
Yes.
And the ratings sucked. And I was like, oh, I'm pretty sure the ratings for Phoenix-Milwaukee
were
kind of the same thing where they weren't that good.
But the thing was there was major talking heads saying, I'm upset that L.A. is not in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm upset that it's not Boston and L.A. And it's like, can we stop? I don't see anyone complaining that the Montreal Canadiens aren't a favorite to make the freaking Stanley Cup.
And I think that's a big part of it. The other sports are not completely clear, but baseball, I think, does have a love affair with the Yankees and Dodgers. And rightfully so. They are the best teams
Baseball. Salary cap yeah. also has a love affair with the Yankees yes. and Dodgers.
They're two of the best teams year in and year out. Don't get me wrong. But it does seem like basketball, more than any other sport in America,
wants it to be those teams.
Those two teams. Maybe the Knicks.
Yes.
Golden State earned their way in.
Yep.
And then whoever LeBron's playing for.
And that's
kind of about it.
And that's where we come back to the main crux of the whole thing. How loud was the celebration for LeBron James
mm-hmm.
nationally? It was, okay, he did it.
Moving on.
Whereas even this, with Ovechkin, it is, oh my God, one of Gretzky's records actually falls. The other two? Nah, those are
not
safe.
A shot.
Those are safe. You're not hitting his assists, therefore you are not hitting his points. You're just not doing
mm-hmm.
it. Not with how goalies were flopping around all the time in the ice back in the day. No way.
Love it. Miss those
There
days.
Was no technique. They were doing what I would do. Scramble.
Mm-hmm.
And I shouldn't be able to relate to a pro player. But then again, I get it. If I saw Wayne Gretzky coming down the wing with one of his more talented wingers, and I'm just like,
I'm leaving the crease. I'm charging.
Not even leaving the crease. I'm just floundering, and we're going to see what happens. And that's what it was back in the early 80s.
I love those highlights so much.
Oh, my God. It's so great to see them just, diving along the ice, and I'm like, that's me.
They're just trying their best, man.
I guess.
It's the ultimate just trying their best.
It's an effort thing, and you know what? All credit to those goalies out there. And I think here's the other part with Ovechkin. There's more aspects that he gets to walk away with all time. Power play goals, he's the king.
Yep.
And I don't think anyone's ever going to say it otherwise. Like, Oh, it's the Ovechkin spot. Tage's power play goals. Oh, it's the Ovechkin spot.
Yep.
Game-winning goals. Well, you score the most goals, there's a good chance that some of them are going to have meaning.
Wait, not all of them are going to be eh.
Yeah, but that's the thing. He does have that. It's 136. And the record tire was a game winner against Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
That put them up 4-3. And, of course, shots on goal because nobody took more shots than Alex Ovechkin in their first 6 years.
Love it.
That man just peppered it.
803-0550, the number to call. Busy sports weekend, and we've got a Masters this week. The draft coming up in just over 2 weeks. Also, do want to mention some stuff with baseball. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. does get his long-term extension with the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll talk about that here after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and this is WGR. Quick segment here. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Been mentioning that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. did get his long-term extension with the Toronto Blue Jays just a few weeks ago. It felt like that ship had sailed, that this was going to be his last year, and then he would be a very sought-after free agent in Major League Baseball. I know, as an Angels fan, needing a potential first baseman and knowing that his dad had played with the Angels and won an MVP there, I'd have been all for it. That did not happen. He does sign a 14-year, $500 million extension with the Toronto Blue Jays, thus becoming the third highest total in total value in MLB contracts ever. Derek, have you ever looked at these contracts?
No.
That's fine. That's okay.
That's fine.
Because it's like four teams for 10 players. So you start at the top, Juan Soto this past offseason, the Mets, 15 years, $765 million. That feels fake.
That feels fake. It's actually Monopoly money.
Right. Shohei Ohtani, the Dodgers, 10 years, $700 million. I think we've all kind of heard the story of that contract, which is going to be, it's going to spaced over like 30 years. It's going to be absurd. Guerrero, we just mentioned. Mike Trout has been at his spot for a very long time.
Right.
His extension with the Angels, 12 years, $426.5 million. The Dodgers come back with Mookie Betts, 12 years, 365. Judge with the Yankees, 9 years, 360. Manny Machado, the Padres make their entry here, 11 years, 350. Lindor with the Mets, 10 years, 341. Tatis back with the Padres, 14 years, 340. And then Bryce Harper with the Phillies, 13 years, 330. That is a monopoly on like the highest paid contracts. I will tell you.
Yeah, no other sports touching that.
But I do enjoy looking at the Padres. I don't know. The Padres, for me, were like never that team that did that. And then all of a sudden, they're like, we're going to do it. We're going to do it.
I really do wonder where all this money comes from to spend on players.
Don't ask me, man.
Like, I don't, like, and then the brain rot within me goes, there's money in the banana stand. There's always money in the banana stand. And I'm just like, shut up. Because I don't know where this money comes from.
Yeah.
To be able to hand to these players over time. Like, yeah, you're spacing it out over time, but they're giving you that, but they're giving you what?
Yeah. It's a lot of money out there. And then, of course, the Padres did give out another extension this past week and stuff like that. There's a lot of money flying around. But, I look at most of these players and I'm like, I get it. Makes sense to me. I get it.
Sure. No, it doesn't make sense to me. None of this does.
Oh, well, in terms of the top 10. I'm like, okay, this makes sense.
The dollars still will never make sense.
No, but if you like get out the dollars and you're like, here, this is top 10, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah, the players being given the most money, yes, that top 10, yes. That kind of money, not sure where they get it from.
Yeah, not sure.
Especially because I know that all ballparks do not sell out on a consistent basis.
Especially nowadays?
Yeah.
And during this time?
Where is that money coming from?
Yeah, during this time of year.
Where is it coming from? I don't know.
Just wild.
Help me.
By the way, looking at the very early standings for the MLB, the Yankees lead the AL East at 6-3, and then the Toronto Blue Jays are in third, 5-5 record for them, -6 run differential.
Yeah, I refuse to believe.
You refuse to believe?
Yeah.
Guerrero, average 256. Has not hit a home run yet, though, this year.
What's it with Yeah, the Sabres are a main rooting interest that also stink, but you know, what's with my other typical rooting interests not doing what I want them to do?
I was molded by it, man. Just born
Angels,
in
yeah.
Angels, Texas for a long time.
Yeah, you're at least used to it.
Sabres, Bills actually, wait, for most of my
I
life.
I should be. I like the Jays in baseball, and I like Purdue in college.
Yeah.
Who had more tournament wins than football wins.
That's so good. 803-0550, the number two call. Do want to get onto the NFL draft. Playing around with a little bit of draft simulator earlier this morning. Want to jump back into that. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, you're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
You're listening to the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
Bruins putting some pressure on deep, and it's that top line again. Lindholm with the tie-up. Tage Thompson has got a breakaway. Takes the pass. Deep scores! Tage TNT Thompson! What a goal! 5-3 Sabres!
Buffalo Sabres. They keep winning.
How are they not officially dead? Great question. I have no idea.
It's a great question. Although, with that being said, the season is now on life support. It has been.
Because the Canadians, for some reason, keep winning.
Yes. So that is their magic number. I've seen it all over Twitter now, so this is not an original thought by me, but their magic number is 2.
Blood is going to start dripping out of my ears from the anger that I have about the Sabres not solving the Montreal Canadiens, so let's not.
If Montreal wins any of their remaining games, Sabres
or
are
if the
out.
Sabres lose in regulation in Sabres, any of their games.
Yes.
It's officially over, and year 14 becomes official like a ref with a whistle.
Fun part about it, Montreal's on a 5-game win streak. The Sabres are on a 4-game win streak.
Thanks, I hate it.
Both teams are playing very, very well. And if you look at Montreal's remaining schedule, Detroit at home, at Ottawa, at Toronto, Chicago, and Carolina both at home.
Despite the fact that they settled 3 entire months into last place in the Eastern Conference, actually 4.
Mm-hmm.
4 entire months of being in last place in the Eastern Conference. They are not the first, not even the second, nor the third team eliminated in their conference. Boston, Philadelphia, and Pittsburgh all have been eliminated before Buffalo now.
Who would have thunk it? We were talking about that before we came on here today. Boston, just 2 years ago, the historic regular season.
Legitimately hilarious. Yeah.
Then they lose that opening series to Florida. And since then, it's been all downhill.
Oh, the Hurricanes helped them break their streak? Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Carolina continues to give us nothing in the world of hockey.
But it is wild to see Boston having fallen this far. I mean, they're not even just a middling team. They're atrocious.
Yeah. So the Sabres lost 13 straight. That's going to be the season best now this year because Boston had lost 10 in a row. Then Carolina goes ahead and just decides, we don't like to play hockey this day. You can have this. And ready? Watch. Tomorrow night, they're going to show up and just like beat the brakes off the Sabres for no reason.
Well, I don't like how you say it like that. I mean,
because Carolina is still a franchise that is poison to me.
It's probably going to stay around for a while.
Forget about playing in Carolina, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that's just always been a disaster for a decade.
They're at home, though, tomorrow.
Cool. That makes me feel somewhat better.
Been playing very well at home.
I do want them to just beat Carolina, just to beat Carolina at this point. I don't even care anymore.
21-14-3 at home, by the way, for the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah. And you've won 14 of your last 18 at home.
Mm-hmm. Flip that, though, on the road. They're 13-22-3.
Yeah. Road Sabres has become the new thing this year. And that's not good. I don't like that road Sabres is a bad thing because 2 years ago,
very good
funny
thing.
How 2 years ago things are so vastly different. They were great on the road, as a matter of fact. And it was home when they weren't wearing the goat heads where they were an active problem.
That's right. We did have a run there with the goat heads where they wore like 7 times and they were 7-0 or whatever that was.
It was also just they couldn't win with any other jersey at home.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't. They did the reverse retro. That didn't do so hot. They would do their normal blues. That was not going well. And then they would just so happen to be wearing those goat head jerseys. And they would be winning games. And typically in dominant fashion. It was weird. It's been a very weird season.
Could do is throw your hands up and say, that's one hell of a coincidence.
Yeah, it's been a very, very weird season.
Oh, my God. Don't get me started.
It's not really that weird for the Sabres. That's just kind of par for the course. It really is for them.
Yeah.
But they are winning at the end of the year. They've done this a few times. It is something, though, that usually they do send you on somewhat, as much as it can be, a good feeling going into the offseason.
What did I say about the end of the year? Give me things to attach to.
Mm-hmm.
UPL, not helping your case, big dog. The Sabres needed to score at least four again to make sure that they got away with it, because there were times where I was like, I don't know what you're doing against Boston. I had no idea where he's going on that first goal. That second goal is, you are, again, you're the penalty killer that needs to perform the best as a goaltender, and he's not. And it just... That said, there is a new thing to attach to. I think Zach Benson's made the jump.
Think so?
I think so. He's got that dogged determination that works perfectly for a pair of skilled players like Kulik and Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Tage's first goal is a product of Zach Benson forcing a turnover, feeding it to the slot, and Tage is open enough to be able to just, hey, I'm going to wind up and fire. Zach Benson is making the jump.
They need it. They do need it. Tage Thompson, though, bringing him up, 43 goals this year so far. Don't think he hits 50.
No.
That would be...
you need a goal a game.
Yeah. But 45?
That's tough.
45 to 48?
45 to 48 is beautiful, but even like 48, I would still say, is asking of much. But you get a 45-goal season out of Tage for this, and it's like, man, you have Rasmus Dahlin and Tage Thompson. How are we not building a successful roster by now?
Right.
And I think that has to do with, I have zero confidence now in Luukkonen, but we don't need to talk about that again.
Yep, because talking about
building... I'd rather not, for like the third week in a row, talk about Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen and his struggles. I want to keep my mental health.
Yep, because talking about building a successful roster, the NFL draft is in just a few weeks. We are well and truly...
I'll give you a 7 out of 10 transition.
Thank you. We are well and truly into April. ESPN has a draft simulator.
Yes.
Which I did not know until this morning.
Oh, I found this baby. And no, this is now like PFF, you're dead to me. I have to pay for my trades? I don't think so.
Not a shot.
So now I'm bringing in a Sports Talk Saturday goodness moment here for you, as we're going to go ahead and hit us up a beautiful
mock draft simulator.
And we're going to hit ourselves a mock draft.
There we go. So I'm currently in one right now. Buffalo. I'm only going to round four. Let's not pick like random
people. Let's not get crazy here, but at the same time, yes. I think the point of these for me on Saturdays has been to try to educate people on who are the players that are going to be typically available for you hanging around.
Yep. Through the top 10 here, Cam Ward does go to the Titans at one overall. A new player has entered the reports for Cleveland at two. There was a little bit of rumblings of Abdul Carter out of Penn State for a few weeks. Now, it appears to be Travis Hunter. That's where he goes here in this mock draft. He goes to the Browns at 2. The Giants take Abdul Carter at 3. The Patriots go and get Mason Graham. I do think they would be crushed if they don't get Hunter at 2. That seems to be what everyone's sort of building this to, is, hey, we'd like this Stephon Diggs addition. If you get Travis Hunter to kind of be your number one and plus kind of have him play it as a cornerback as well. Mason Graham, though, not a bad player by any means. Of course, he's going to the top 5 here. And he was the Batman to Kenneth Grant's Robin on that Michigan State interior defense. Jaguars go Jalen Walker, edge rusher. Raiders go Shedeur Sanders. So his drop is not really far at all, which is interesting. If that would have happened in real life, Geno Smith, we now know, is a 3-year extension or 3 years total with the Raiders.
Yes, but those things can be moved around.
Right. And so maybe that is something where, hey, we really like Geno Smith being a clear mentor for Shedeur Sanders. Geno, arguably one of the most accurate passers in all of college football. Shedeur Sanders very much throws a catchable ball. You can really kind of mold him into what you want. The athleticism seems to be sort of the issue there. Tet McMillan, the wide receiver out of Arizona, goes to the Jets. Mykel Williams, the edge rusher out of Georgia, goes to the Panthers. Will Johnson, the cornerback out of Michigan, goes to the Saints. And then Tyler Warren, the tight end out of Penn State, goes to the Bears. That is your top 10. No Ashton Jeanty just yet.
Yeah, so what are we looking at the big board here for Buffalo? If you're hitting it, hanging around 30, you have not traded up.
No.
So,
when you run these sorts of things, though, the players that could be available for you, you know, players like a Kenneth Grant, Azariah Thomas, the corner out of Florida State, the safeties like Nick Amonwori out of South Carolina or Malachi Starks out of Georgia. Typically, one of them is hanging around there. Maxwell Hairston, corner out of Kentucky, is another one of those players that's very popular to be talking about right now. Something in the ESPN draft that I've seen very fascinating is James Pierce, the edge rusher out of Tennessee, typically is making a fall.
His seems to be more maturity issues. Mm-hmm. Those have been becoming the reports of not great, although his athletic abilities, his traits, will not be surprised at all to find out that is more a team at the bottom of the first round going, we want him just to get a little bit closer to us, a little bit closer
yes.
to us. That seems to be what it is because there was, at least from what I've seen, no reports. There was nothing on it up until about a month ago.
And ready? Smokescreen season.
Yep.
A team trying to deliberately tank a stock so that they can go ahead and try to get it.
We know, in fact, that is the thing.
And that's where, now ready? Start familiarizing yourself with James Pierce if that's going to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
If he does get to like 22, 23, a team like the Bills, that is a perfect opportunity to trade up for an edge rusher like James Pierce Jr. Other guys like Donovan Azaraku out of Boston College at edge is another great option here for you. So who do we got here on the Zach Jones mock draft on the big board?
All right, so following the next 10 picks, some of the notable ones, the 49ers take Jahdae Barron, the cornerback out of Texas. Two safeties have gone as well. The Falcons take Nick Amonwori at 15. Malachi Starks goes to the Bengals at 17.
Ouch.
And before that, the Cowboys do the most Cowboy move ever.
Oh, love it.
They take Ashton Jeanty.
Yes. Of course.
Also, Omarion Hampton, the second running back off the board, goes to the Broncos at 20. So we're at 21 with the Steelers. I find this to be the spot where the Bills could trade up.
Yes.
I think this is where the actual idea of maybe trading up begins.
If the quarterbacks fall into a certain place in order mm-hmm. for the Steelers, or if they don't, they mm-hmm. are a viable candidate to move down.
Do we want to try to trade up with Pittsburgh, or do we want to let this play out a little bit more?
I'd say let the next two picks happen.
Okay. All right. So the Steelers do go exactly where I think they're going to go.
They took Jackson Dart.
Jackson Dart.
Absolutely. So that's perfect because now you're thinking, all right, that's a player that your board was not even close to thinking about is gone.
I think another player the Bills were not thinking about, the Chargers at 22, Emeka Buka, the wide receiver out of Ohio State. I do not think wide receiver is an early need for the Bills at all.
And
I'm looking more at late second round or if you trade into the third round there.
If you need a corner, the Packers were the team that you got to at least talk to or vault.
All right, so let's see if we can make a trade with the Packers. Obviously, we'll
be
trading
them. That's the point of using this now on ESPNs is you could do your trades for free. Mm-hmm.
Now, I do want to see if we can do this here. The Bills do have two fourth round picks, 109 and 132. I'm going to see. There we go. 30 and 109 for pick 23.
I do like having that early fourth, so I'd try to be giving 132 instead.
All right, let's see if like 132 works. 132 does not work.
Well, then throw in one of those four fifth rounders or three fifth rounders that they have.
I'm throwing in the lowest fifth rounder.
177 or was that 173?
173. 177 is in the sixth round. Okay. 173 did not get it done. 170 does not get it done.
169
does get it done.
All right, do it.
All right, so Bills will be moving up to pick 23 in exchange for pick 30, 132 in the fourth round, and then 169 in the fifth round.
Which
so
then allows
we are now
that,
up.
So the Bills aren't making 10 selections. We all knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the exercise to make sure that that's what happens.
So who we've got on the big board, as you mentioned, James Pierce, the edge rusher out of Tennessee. You also have Jahdae Campbell, the linebacker out of Alabama. Not really going to be there as well.
I'd be looking more at positions that mm-hmm. we'd want. I don't look at the big board necessarily at like the best player available at this point because mm-hmm. best player available is probably going to be something that they need anyway.
Right. So, player I know you're a big fan of, Shamar Stewart out of A&M.
Yes.
Mike Green, the Marshall edge rusher, someone I'm a big fan of. I do not think he's going to be
there. Yeah, I don't think he's going to be there either.
He is an explosive athlete that got a lot of sacks at Marshall. Showed out at the Senior Bowl and the Combine. I don't imagine he's going to be there. Derek Harmon, the defensive tackle out of Oregon. I mm-hmm. do know One Bills Live host Chris Brown is a massive fan of his.
Harmon on the scouting report, they seem to think that he's been fit for more of a three-tech role,
mm-hmm.
which kind of like dissuades me from taking Harmon, but I know that he's going to be a good player in his own right at that point.
Yep. Now, I do wonder, because of how deep the defensive tackle class is, do you go to the cornerbacks? We already have Jahdae Barron and Will Johnson, and if you want to count them, Travis Hunter, gone. That's where you're getting in Maxwell Hairston out of Kentucky. How do you say the Florida State
play?
Azaray Thomas.
Azaray Thomas. Trey Amos. I know Benjamin Morrison and Siobhan Revelle are two guys as well.
Those are your like later second round type guys.
So what are you thinking? Where are we going?
Well, if you wanted a corner, you make that move because Green Bay is absolutely a team that is threatening to take a corner.
Mm-hmm. The highest one on the big board is Maxwell Hairston.
And I would probably say Hairston. Let's go ahead and make Hairston the pick. We've got a lot to get to here.
I think I just got kicked out of the mock draft. I got kicked out of the mock draft.
I love that the oh yeah happened there from the track. Right,
I'm going to try too long. I'm going to try to do this again. All right, so Maxwell Hairston, he's a guy, good tackler, seems to be a very good athlete. I think this is where the Bills would have to go anyways.
Yes, if they want to get a corner and solidify having the opportunity to, moving up for a player like that is absolutely an option. Or if you want one of those pass rushers and you know you need to take an opportunity to move up,
mm-hmm.
that is where you're going to have to do it.
Yeah, I don't see the Bills trading up for defensive tackle. I just don't. There's too much depth in the class. There's too many guys they can go get in one of their second round picks. As we've mentioned, we haven't even traded those guys yet. They're still very much available. So it kind of feels like if you're going to trade up, you're
probably doing it for an edge rusher.
Yeah.
Because you could trade down into the second round.
So you think an edge rusher then?
Yeah. For me, it's got to be edge rusher if you're moving up. Corner is deep, and you can probably fall back into the second round, which I know everyone would be driven insane about it to do it for a second year in a row. But if you want a corner and you want to try to add more value and in particular try to get that third round pick or ammunition to move into the third round,
mm-hmm.
that's the right move.
All right, so there were a little bit of differences here in this rerun that we're doing. Guys like Nick Emmanuel are available. James Pierce is available. Mike Green, of course. Maxwell Hairston. So, all right, where do you want to go with this pick? Are you thinking James Pierce?
I'm thinking James Pierce at that point.
Okay.
Or if Mike Green is sitting there, you do it. But you said that he just went, and that's perfectly fine and normal.
It's loading.
Yep. That's the one thing, is that this when you make the pick, it takes time to load, but it's perfectly fine.
Where are we sitting on that Thursday night? If it's a guy like Mike Green or James Pierce,
if they trade up for an edge rusher, I'm ecstatic, because they got Joey Bosa, but that's a 1-year deal,
right? And there's the injury fears with them.
Yeah,
you won't necessarily even have them for a full year.
But also, it would help you set up for the long term on the position.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, please sign me up for that. Give me an opportunity to have a player like that for my long term, and I'm very happy.
Okay, so we're at pick 44. It's the Cowboys. We have had two cornerbacks go here to start round two. The Eagles took Maxwell Hairston to end round one. Benjamin Morrison then went to the Patriots at 38. Siobhan Revelle just went to the 49ers at 43. Is this a spot where you want to try to trade up in the second round, or are you kind of just holding pat, we're going to just pick in the second round here?
I would still just say pick in the second round. There's going to be a lot of options still.
Okay. Jalen Knoll going to the Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting.
There you go. Are you on slow?
I am on slow.
That's probably why.
All right, okay. So we have options here. Trey Amos.
Trey Amos, perfect.
The cornerback out of Ole Miss. He is somebody I don't know if people would love taking him in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's there in the second round, I think for many people that would be the easy get it done.
Yes, go get it done.
Now, in terms of our next pick, I think the answer is probably pretty easy here in terms of what you need and where the board has fallen for you. Defensive tackle TJ Sanders out of South Carolina, or staying with defensive tackle Joshua Farmer out of Florida State. I think either one of those two would be a really good get for you in the second round.
I think Farmer's a good get there, especially with the depth at defensive tackle. As you were saying, do we do that here? And it's like, no, absolutely not. That's why. But I think Amos, for positional value, is probably the better idea here. Because
mm-hmm.
your next pick is very close by. I'd imagine you can get Farmer heading around. Amos, I don't think stays.
Yeah, so that's where it's like, well, wait, you'll wait on Farmer. Or as it was, TJ Sanders was there too. So you had two options there if you want to go. I think Farmer, though, has a pre-draft visit with the Bills,
mm-hmm.
if I remember correctly. So that makes sense there. Now it becomes interesting. Do you trade into the third round? And for what position? You have edge, corner, and defensive tackle. Safety is arguably a need. You, depending on who you ask, wide receiver's a need. Or do you just kind of hold on and go, we'll just pick in the fourth round? That doesn't appear to be what the team does. They don't make fourth round selections often.
They don't.
It's the third round that they do. And the third round pick is typically what you want to try to get yourself back into.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we're at the Cowboys 76. Had a few guys taken already. No real run on wide receivers at this point yet. Let's look at the big board. Let's see who's available. In terms of safeties, I know a guy you're a big fan of. Jalen Reed out of Penn State.
Yep. No, Kevin Winston's the guy that
Kevin
I
Winston.
Want out of Penn State.
All right, so now I'm kind of wondering about safety.
At safety, at that point, I'm pretty sure you're just letting it ride at this point for a little bit.
Now, wide receiver, much more interesting.
There's a lot of options.
Jack
typically.
Beck, Jalen Royals, Isaiah Bond.
Go ahead, do it.
Let's make a trade with Dallas, so it'll be...
Oh, I thought you were going to take your Texas wide receiver.
Oh, I haven't traded up yet. We're in the third round. We're not there
okay,
yet.
Okay.
All right, so pick 76. And then what do we got here? We got 109, 170, 173, 177, and 206. I think 109, your best fourth round pick.
Yes.
And then do you want to go 173? Oh, well, then I'm going to take that.
Yeah, it might be tough.
Yeah, this is where it gets interesting.
Yeah. It gets a little fascinating.
Do you go 170 quick? In the fourth round and then next year's? Man, they don't want to trade up at all.
Go find a different team then.
Wow.
Jerry's getting in your way.
I could give you the rest of my draft and Dallas is like, no, I'm cool.
Yeah.
I'm all right. I won't do that.
Jerry, stop. But the Bills do have a lot to jump through to get into the third round if they don't trade down.
Well, especially because your next pick is a while away.
Yes.
All right, we're at pick 81 so with Bengals.
I would suspect the Bills are going to trade down with one of their second-round picks at this point this year.
You think so?
Yes. Because then you can at least get the value needed to move around in the third round.
This is now making me really wonder about trading into the third round. I mean, now a lot of these guys have been taken as well. Jalen Royals goes to the Broncos. Isaiah Bond goes to the Seahawks. The Seahawks take two receivers in this draft. Jack Beck goes to the Cardinals.
Well, it makes sense you trade DK.
Yeah. But this is now – it sort of is feeling like you just wait till the fourth round.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was really no one necessarily you needed to trade up for. I think what they would want to go in the third round is who is the last guy we had like a second-round pick on or right. second-round grade on and try to go get him.
And try to go get him and see. It's more of a reactionary thing.
Fourth round. Oh. Top player. Cam Scadabo. Do they do it?
Which would be an interesting storyline heading into day three for us.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be looking at it. Cam Scadabo was probably your biggest name yep. recognition.
I'll go with, to finish this out here, Jalen Reed, the safety out of Penn State. Not the one they necessarily wanted, but the highest rated safety on this big board. Mm-hmm. They do have a positional need there. I don't think wide receivers just up there, especially with what this draft class is. They don't necessarily need to go there. They can wait it out. I like the idea of Jalen Royals or an Isaiah Bond, who they have brought in on a pre-draft visit. But if ultimately no one's willing to trade with you, there's no reason to force it either. I mean, I'd be having to give away most of this draft and then like a pick next year, and there's just no reason for that.
It's tough to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. The music, I think, is the most important part of Mock Draft Simulator.
I'm so curious if a guy like James Pierce falls. I really am curious if he falls. Because he's an athletic specimen you kind of want to have there.
Yeah. There's a lot to this draft and a bevy of directions and options that they can go in.
By the way, I like this here too. So ESPN does this thing afterwards.
Yeah, it shows you the chance available at the pick and the chance available if they were not taken.
Real quick, before we take our next time out, I do want to run through that. So Pierce, bringing that up here. Chance available at the pick, 23. We had to trade up there. 96%. Chance after the pick? 3.
Yeah. It's you go up and get him.
Trey Amos, you brought this up with him. Chance available at the pick? 20%.
Right.
A little surprised he's there. After available at the next pick? 11%. Yeah. Likely whoever's there
chances
is going to
dip.
Take him. Yep.
It's more or less you go get the guy.
Yeah.
I think that's what the percentages kind of encourage you to do with that.
And then Joshua Farmer, also you mentioned there, you could probably get him on the go around. Exactly what it was. Chance available at the pick? 67%. Chance available at the next pick? 6%. And then for Jalen Reed, we're getting to later stages.
So like those percentages can fluctuate as they would.
No percentage at the next pick, 58 at the pick.
And that is your latest Mock Draft Simulator.
Who are your favorite targets for this upcoming draft? We are in the dying days of draft preparation as we are just a little over 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And if you want to join the show, 803-0550 is the number to call. This is WGR.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide. Or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball, the game's official home for games, is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Cleared back out, and the bouncing ball goes into the open net, and Matt Vince will get the goal. So from one goal crease to another, goaltender Matt Vince scores for Buffalo on an empty net with 55.4 seconds remaining.
Saturday was a really fun day. That's Matt Vince scoring a goalie goal for the Buffalo Bandits, who stop a two-game slide, officially clinch a home playoff game in the first round of the NLL playoffs, and remain in first place in the National Lacrosse League. I'm Derek Kramer, that's Zach Jones. John Gertler on that call for you, by the way, as this is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. The Bandits stop a slide. UB women cut down the nets. The Sabres beat Tampa.
I was going to say they keep winning.
No, I know, but like...
they keep winning.
Like,
it's Tampa.
It was a fun Saturday.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, it was a fun Saturday. You beat Tampa, too. Like, yeah, Jonas Johansson started in net, but still...
Got it done.
You allowed only two goals to the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
Take that.
Final Four has been very exciting. We get the wrap-up there tonight.
Final Four was on that Saturday as well. Saturday was a really good sports day. And for Buffalo, a successful one.
Mm-hmm. Very successful one.
I will say it's nice, though, knowing that you have different aspects to this. And it was nice that the Bandits got off the slide that they were on, because ever since they had a chance to officially clinch a home playoff game, they lost two straight by one goal each.
Yeah.
And three of their four losses this year have been one goal.
The only team in Buffalo that didn't have a good weekend was the Bisons, and it's because their games kept getting rained out.
Yeah.
Like, their games eventually got canceled.
So it's not even about being on the field.
They're the only ones.
It's not even about being on the field. It was the weather.
Yeah. Every game was like, it'll be a doubleheader. Eh, maybe not. Maybe not.
We'll have to punt that to later date.
Never. To never. I think the games are just outright canceled now.
Jeez.
Not great.
That's rough. That is rough.
But yeah, overall, and very good sports weekend for Buffalo.
I don't understand why baseball is now starting in, like, March.
That's...
It's kind of, like, mystifying to me because, like, weather up in northern cities, mm-hmm. if you don't have a dome, you're not going to play.
Well, and
there's the Rockies chance. Played in snow over the weekend, too.
Yes, right. They did.
That's right.
Like, there's a decent chance that you're not playing games to start the year.
Well, I guess that's my thing, too. Like, I know baseball is always going to have the long season. I get it.
Yes, and you do have games. To pace it I get out it. Proper. You're absolutely right.
But also, do we have to play 162 games? Do we have to? We could start middle of April.
Can reduce the games a little bit. Snip it a little bit.
Well, that's my thing. It's like, because I'm all for October baseball. I think there is something truly
you need to have
about like
October baseball.
Yeah, when the playoffs are happening and yeah, the northern cities start to get a little colder.
It's called the Fall Classic.
Yes, it can stay. Season can start a little later. It starts a little later.
Do an even 100. Why 162?
Ready? 150.
I guess.
Because that's an even number.
150.
Yeah.
You want a clean number? 150.
Yeah, and we get into April, and we're good.
It's still a lot of games.
But that's baseball. I don't want to ever have them go too close to NHL, NBA, where it's like.
Yeah, you're cutting the season in almost half.
And to be fair, I also
62 games off the schedule. That's an aggressive ask. You start small. You go, hey, we're going to take a dozen here. And we're just going to make them go away. You guys will still play 150 games and have legitimate shots at records.
There it is. That was the big thing for me is but I also, don't want to take away record opportunities.
12
forever.
Is still asking for a lot for record opportunities.
Yes.
It's asking a lot. That said, the way that hitting has improved and the science and technology of the bats and swinging styles and techniques has improved, it kind of is like this great equalizer of sorts. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So if you were to trim games off of this, say you trim off 8 games even, which gives you just an even more awkward number of 154.
Yep.
It still gives you something. You want to give people a fair shake on trying to break records still, especially in a sport where you're seeing other sports add games to their schedules,
yeah.
Particularly the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think, asking to cut a drastic amount of games. Even 12 is like a heavy ask. But if you want to keep an even number, 150 sounds like a perfect amount. And you start in April.
That's all I'm asking for.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. Because it can be very frustrating to watch teams like Boston and the Yankees and you look at their stadiums and you're like, oh, there's no one there. It's because it's 45 degrees. And it's a Wednesday.
Yeah, it's 45 degrees at 2 o'clock on a Wednesday. What did you expect?
Like, no one's going
to
be there.
Welcome back to why I'm questioning how do they have this money to hand out to players. Because...
Don't ask the questions.
Because there. I'm seeing like...
Do not ask the questions.
I'm seeing like maybe 8,000 people on a Wednesday afternoon.
Right.
It's like, okay, how are you doing this? I don't know.
I have enjoyed watching baseball, though, to start this year. I've really enjoyed it. Not just because the Angels are good. Like, I'm pushing myself to stick with it.
Right.
Like, even if the Angels are out, stick with it and what have you. Like, the NL West looks to be amazing. Forget about the Rockies, whatever. No one cares.
The Rockies Giants, be like, okay.
Yeah, the Giants, the Padres, the Dodgers, all awesome. All awesome this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, I can get there. Toronto gets the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. extension done. Still hasn't hit a homer yet. I mean, we're getting there with him. That contract might end up being a little
funny how 2 years works. Because Toronto was looking like they were going to set themselves up with that core that we watched mm-hmm. in Buffalo. And now it's like, make the pain end.
But there's some for me. Like I want
or
to
like,
stick like
with
baseball.
Or it was like their outright refusal to get pitching staff. Thanks, guys.
Well, that'll do it, too.
Thanks,
but
guys.
I want to stick with baseball. And partially, we mentioned the first hour, too. I'm not the biggest NBA fan, but I typically watch the playoffs.
Right.
I can't say I'm going to this year. I can't say I really ultimately care all that much because I have become very jaded towards how it's covered. And it really has frustrated me to the point where I'm like, the league seemingly doesn't care that Oklahoma City and Cleveland are their two best teams record-wise in their conference. Yeah.
How
so why
it is
should I?
How it is covered is absolutely a travesty. And I think the other part of it, though, is when you are allowing more teams to play postseason than the NHL does – that's bad. It's not good for your product.
You're not a fan of the play-in tournament.
No.
Okay.
why should I watch a sub 500 team that is just not good? You're sub 500 for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Try to have a chance to survive to become cannon fodder in the first round. Because that's what they're playing for.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing for the 8 seed.
Yeah.
And say an 8 seed who had to fight and claw and get their way into the playoffs, say they have one bad day. And it's one bad day. It's not a series. It's a bad day. They're done.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why are we allowing mediocrity to thrive? That's the problem.
You could say the same thing in the NFL, too, with the addition of the 7 seed.
The 7 seed has done that. But also, oftentimes, the 7 seed is a winning record.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep.
They often show that they don't belong, save for one time. Thank you, Dallas, for choking that one out. But the Mavericks are 38-41. 41. That officially tells me right now you are not a winning basketball club. Mm-hmm. Because you are, you have at minimum already lost half of your games. And teams 7 through 10. Minnesota, with Anthony Edwards, as you talked about. You have one bad day. Gone.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the difference between the 8 and the 9 seed. 46-32 for the 7 and 8 seeds for the records. 38 wins for both the 9 seed and the 10 seed. And those two teams are going to be able to fight to survive? No, you have zero business being here.
Yeah.
Those teams are 8 wins away from a wild card. Officially.
But yet they're allowed to play in a tournament.
They're allowed to play
in the 7th and 8th team.
No, not even a tournament. They're allowed to play postseason basketball.
Mm-hmm. While the 7th seed and the 8th seed team get punished for it.
I remember
when this was coming around.
As a matter of fact, the 5 seed and the 6th seed are also the same record.
Yeah, so really everyone's... It's pretty close. It's pretty close.
Denver is one drop-off, one quick little drop-off from being in danger of the play-in tournament.
Yeah.
We're allowing the Kings and the Mavericks to be here for what reason? The way basketball has gone is bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad. And ratings, like, again, it's mediocrity defined.
Well, yeah, well, and especially, too, their TV contracts are set. No one cares. They're getting their money.
Yeah.
It's not like they're in danger. And I think that was a big thing brought up during the Four Nations and the All-Star Tournament where everyone's like, they don't care. They've got their TV contracts. They're good. They're fine. They're set. But you do wonder, on a sport that seemingly, while never was going to touch the NFL, was clearly cementing it not that long ago, was clearly setting itself up to be the number two sport in America.
Now, ready?
It seemingly has completely lost it.
The Eastern Conference does often reward mediocrity with their 7 or 8 seed.
Sure.
And they have for years.
Sure.
And when I say years, I mean decades.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were times where, like, a floundering Pistons or Nets team.
Orlando, never forget.
Would flounder their way into an 8 seed.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, it's the same thing. I've got the Magic at 40 losses, Atlanta at 41 losses, and then your 9 and 10 are still 2 games behind that.
Yeah, they're essentially all the same club, though.
Those are all the same club.
Mm-hmm.
So the East does oftentimes let mediocrity thrive, but the West typically does not.
No.
The West is oftentimes, historically, deeper. And we're letting the Kings and Mavericks play basketball in the postseason because they wanted to keep the ratings around after doing this as a COVID thing at first. The NHL didn't keep it. Why did you?
It is interesting to see where
I'll tell you why. It's because LA was there at one point.
Yeah. They were really bad.
They were really bad.
Then they got good.
LA with LeBron was there
mm-hmm.
a couple years back.
Yep.
There was no way you're getting rid of it now. We need to protect our Bron.
But like even stuff they do in season, the in-season tournament, who cares?
Who cares?
Like, what is that?
It was supposed to be something that you could give a little bit more of, like, okay, maybe there's a way to try to bring some excitement to early season basketball.
But funny enough, like we just talked about baseball going down from 162 games to 150. Basketball and the NHL, I can maybe argue the same thing of like 82 to like 70, 72. But NHL, those players constantly are playing.
Yes.
They're not sitting. I'm not hearing all the time about, well, you know.
Load management.
We got to make sure. NBA, it's not that at all. NBA, the regular season is such a waste of time.
Yes.
For everybody. Where the NHL, people cared because of the All-Star break, which ultimately ended up being the Four Nations, but people care because of the record chases and such. Where it seems like we brought up in the first hour, the NBA, no one cared.
The way it's
no
covered.
No one cared.
I think it's the way it's covered. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. You've hammered it there. Of, yeah, it's kind of embarrassing.
To the point now where, as you mentioned, if it's not Boston and LA, you're going to have somebody on ESPN bitching and moaning because how dare Cleveland
or
decide
the
that they're going to be good.
Or the Knicks.
How dare they decide that they're going to also try to be good? It's just it's such a weird sport now with how it's covered and how
and there, that has
there's
more
no
to do
torch
with,
passing. There's none of it.
That has more to do with ESPN than anything.
Sure.
Because TNT, they try to actually do a good job with that. And oh, by the way, you're losing that show.
Yeah, the one positive thing that
the one
like
positive thing
agrees
that NBA
on.
Coverage is the one that's being bought out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number two call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here until 12 o'clock as we get you over to Sabres Live in just about 15 minutes. You're listening to WGR.
Welcome back. Last segment here of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I'm Derek Kramer. That's Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt on the board. He and I have had a very fun time over the break here finding you a list of the goaltenders that Alex Ovechkin played and did not score against because the record breaker took one off of that list. Ilya Sorokin of the New York Islanders headed into that game on Sunday afternoon being one of the few that had played against Alex Ovechkin and not been scored against. One power play goal later, Ovechkin has the record, and he is off of that honored list. The Russian Machine Never Breaks, a site that follows the Washington Capitals, has the list of players that have faced an Ovechkin shot and never surrendered a goal. I can tell you this right now. There are a pair of Buffalo, former or current Buffalo Sabres, three. I have two former Buffalo Sabres, one current Buffalo Sabre, that have faced a shot from Alex Ovechkin and not surrendered a goal.
Who we got?
We've got Michael Neuwirth.
With the most shots faced.
With the most shots faced of nine games played, 25 shots against, zero goals. Good for Michael Neuwirth.
Giddy up. Sabres legend Jocelyn Thibeault.
Sabres legend Jocelyn Thibeault.
One game, five shots. And then the current Sabre is?
Devin Levi faced four Ovechkin shots and has yet to yield a goal. Why did we look this up? Because Curtis Joseph on Twitter, he of former Leafs and Wings glory, and a couple other teams, but he was still one of the better goaltenders you'd seen back in the day, tweeted out, congrats to the greatest goal scorer of all time, Alex Ovechkin, feeling very lucky to not have been a part of it. And Budweiser Canada sent him a limited edition can, and it says 0 of 8.95.
That's so good.
So here are a couple other of your interesting names here, Curtis Joseph being there on the list there. Joey DeCord of the Seattle Kraken is on this list. Kevin Lankinen has faced 14 shots in three games. Vitek Vanacek, a former Caps goalie, I would imagine they're going to have a slight edge in this. Same with Braden Holtby. He played Ovechkin one time in his career because mostly his career was with the Washington Capitals. That's how they end up with, you know, their Stanley Cup. Mandy Fernandez, former Wild goaltender, is on this list. Manny Legace, three games, 14 shots allowed, zero goals. But yes, your Alex Ovechkin champ is a former Caps goaltender in Michael Neuwirth.
That is awesome.
Nine games outside of Washington where he had to play Ovechkin as an opponent. Zero goals on 25 shots.
Here's a real question. How many of those were Sabres games?
No.
Unfortunately,
no time.
I can't find that in 40 seconds.
Also, real quick, we had a listener, Steve, tweet in as well, talking about the Ovi record. Did bring up a name who, if injuries did not get in the way,
probably does it.
Stats say probably does it. That Mike Bossy. of the Islanders. Just going through his career, he played from his age 21 season to his age 30 season. His NHL 82-game average would have been 62 goals a season for Ovechkin.
Tank teams.
For Ovechkin, who now has the record, of course. Throughout his career, his 82-game average would be 49 goals per season. Derek, you have mentioned it a lot. Like these past few years, he's had a tough run, but what could have been? That's going to do it for us. Coming up next, Sabres Live, you're listening to WGR.